In the spring of 2017, award-winning journalist Heather Cabot was surprised to learn that several women in her network were investing in cannabis companies. That realization led to the new book, The New Chardonnay, The Unlikely Story of How Marijuana Went Mainstream. The book is a timely and objective look at nothing less than an astonishing rebranding. To report the story, Cabot traveled all over the United States and Canada, managing to get exclusive interviews with some of the biggest names in the world of cannabis. The result is an eye-opening and colorful narrative journey through the brave new world of legal weed. Heather Cabot is an award-winning journalist and serves on the alumni board of Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism. We welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A delight to have you here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Again, the name of the book, The New Chardonnay, The Unlikely Story of How Marijuana Went Mainstream. So give us a sense, I mentioned it a little bit, of how you decided to write a book about this subject.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, my first book, which came out in the spring of 2017, was called Geek Girl Rising, Inside the Sisterhood Shaking Up Tech. And that was a book about women across the tech ecosystem agitating for change and more diversity in the innovation economy. And one of the chapters of that book featured female angel investors and venture capitalists who were backing women-led tech startups. And so I had kind of delved into that world while I was researching that book, and I noticed that some of those same women were investing in cannabis. And I was really surprised. I mean, I honestly was just blown away because these are people with Wall Street credentials and Ivy League pedigrees and people who I would have regarded as like very straight-laced and conservative. And I just didn't understand why they would want to invest in something federally illegal. And so I started working the phones and I started to understand how big this business was becoming. But the most eye-opening experience, honestly, was when one of the women that I spoke with, a woman named Jean Sullivan, who's a well-known tech investor and has become a quite an advocate for cannabis investing, she said to me, "Listen, I can't explain this to you in just a phone call. Like, this industry is so complicated and nuanced. You have to go to the Marijuana Business Convention in Las Vegas. And if you go there and walk the expo floor and meet the entrepreneurs and see the technology, you'll understand that this is not only a big business, but it's legitimate, it's professional." And so that's what I did. I went and in the fall of 2017, and I went to Vegas and spent a few days at the Marijuana Business Convention. And that was really the beginning of the book proposal.
You know, I was at a book convention, and I found myself on this huge convention floor, and I took a wrong turn off of a four of their big sprawling things, and I ended up at another trade show, which was a marijuana business show, and I was shocked by just the professionalism of it, which is something you really key into in the book, that was something that took you by surprise.
Well, absolutely. I mean, of course, and you can imagine when I told my family that I was going to go to this conference, I remember my parents were like, are you going to be safe? Are you going to be okay? I mean, we're all picturing, you know, the stereotype that people are going to be stoned out of their minds. It's going to be people consuming. It's going to be, you know, this wild party. And, you know, I walk in and it's like the Consumer Electronics Show, which I had been to, you know, a couple of times in my previous work. It's a giant trade show with, you know, huge booths and billboards, and everybody is wearing sweater vests and, you know, carrying legal pads and laptops, and they're handing out business cards, and they have their, you know, lanyards and their swag bags, and no consumption was allowed. And it really felt like any other trade show that I had been to. And the other thing that really struck me was, of course, you know, coming in with no background in this at all, I wasn't really thinking of it as big agriculture. But there's a whole section of this trade show that was just equipment, a giant different, you know, lights and all kinds of you know, growing equipment, but big. And you know, and then when I actually started to visit some of these cultivations, I like most people, I always thought about if somebody was growing pot, you know, it was like, you know, in a closet or something. This was like walking into airplane hangar sized facilities. I mean, you felt like you were walking into like a pharmaceutical company with the kinds of everybody's, you know, wearing lab coats and hair nets, and the security to get in was just crazy, no matter which ones that I visited. So it was very professional and sterile almost, really not what I thought it would be at all. And of course, as I said, the convention really kind of tipped me off also to the fact that, and I do address this in the book, that there's this whole burgeoning ancillary ecosystem of companies that are supporting the industry. So it's software, it's lab equipment, and then there's accountants and lawyers and all these people that specialize in cannabis. And so it's created, you know, all of these, you know, sort of cottage industries around the sector. And that I found fascinating too, which also speaks to what you were saying before about being professional. I mean, now, you know, you see people recruiting for cannabis on LinkedIn.
Right.
And they have focus groups, and they have, you know, it's like any other consumer product, except it's still federally illegal.
Heather Cabot is our guest. The name of the new book is The New Chardonnay, The Unlikely Story of How Marijuana Went Mainstream. So it is federally illegal, and I'm interested in talking a little bit about the timeline here, because as states started to make it legal, this is when we started to see it become part of the mainstream, correct?
Absolutely. And there's one particular gentleman that I quote in the book. His name is Troy Dayton. He was one of the early investors in the space. And he talks to me about the fact that, you know, when once Colorado launched its commercial market, that really poured gasoline on this industry. When people realized you could make a legitimate living doing this out of the shadows, that was when you saw a lot of the big money coming in. And a lot of these people, because it's federally illegal, that the investors who were coming in were people who were pretty much independently wealthy, you know, small family offices, you know, people who had a network of wealthy friends or family to help them get in on the ground floor, because you know, it's impossible to get financing because it's federally illegal. So it really kind of cut out pretty much everyone else except, you know, mostly white wealthy men in the beginning. And actually, that's even still true today to some extent, which is, you know, certainly I think in New York and in other states, as they look at creating these new adult use programs, which are going to be very lucrative, you know, how do you open it up to other people who've been shut out of the industry?
I guess there's ways of looking at this, and I'm curious as to your take on it. I am surprised, being a New York resident, that it is not legal yet in New York, given the fact that many of the border states, it is legal. So why do you think in places, not just in New York, but in other states as well, why there is a hesitancy? And because it isn't as such as one state gets in on it and then everybody's on the bandwagon. This has still, yes, overall has moved pretty quickly, but still there is hesitancy.
Well, I think there's hesitancy because, well, there's a couple of things. First of all, I think in New York, to be quite honest with you, I don't think the reason why it didn't, you know, the legislature took it up in the spring of 2018 and
right,
didn't get it done. And the reason why, one of the big reasons why, was because of the arguments over social equity. So I think that there was, for the most part, certainly the governor was behind it. I think there was momentum to bring adult use to New York, but when it came down to the nitty-gritty of figuring out, for example, you know, how do you ensure that communities of color, people who were targeted by the war on drugs, that they have an equal seat at the table, that they have a way to get into this industry, and it's not, you know, only limited to the very few people who were able to get medical licenses initially. I believe in New York we only have, I think there are 10 licenses for medical use, and in other states what's happened, in Nevada in particular, when they went to adult use, those initial license holders had a priority, and so they just flipped the switch and they became adult use, and so they were able to cash in immediately. And these businesses require incredible amounts of capital. When you're talking about the cultivation, the manufacturing, and the retail side, when you're actually touching the plant, you just were burning through cash to deal not only with the compliance and the rules that the states put on these businesses in order to run, but also the tax implications for these businesses too. It's massive. So and the security and the fact that most of these businesses are still cash because again it's federally illegal. So there's a lot of capital that has to be there in order to even make these businesses operational to begin with. And so what happened in New York, I think, is that as they were trying to figure out, how do they prioritize people who are applying to be license holders from communities that were, that were targeted during the war on drugs, as well as women and LGBTQ and veterans and other groups that haven't been as represented, how do you do that? And then the other part of that is not only giving potential entrepreneurs from those backgrounds, a leg up in the process, and supporting them. But then, what do you do about all the people who have convictions for low-level marijuana offenses? That's been a really big problem, and you've seen how different states. If you look state to state, you'll see how they're all each dealing with it differently. But it's not as if like you flip a switch and everyone who's ever been convicted or frankly is still incarcerated that they suddenly have their records wiped clean. So California, for example, I believe that there were over 200,000 convictions that needed to be cleared, but they didn't have a system at the at the local level through the DA's offices to actually figure out how do they go through all the data to decipher whose record gets cleared, and then how do they actually contact the people? They actually ended up bringing in a nonprofit called Code for America with software engineers that were dispatched to a number of counties to help the local prosecutors actually go through that information so that they could let people know. So these are not easy. From a policy point of view, and actually, in practice, these are not easy things to do. So I believe when it comes to New York, and certainly actually New Jersey as well, which is why New Jersey is now, it's interesting, New Jersey's voters are going to vote on a ballot initiative, but the legislature couldn't get it done. And I just think all of this goes to say that, these programs have to be done really thoughtfully, and there are a lot of stakeholders. And they're figuring it out. A lot of the entrepreneurs would say to me, "We're building the plane while flying it," and that is true not only for the entrepreneurs but for government.
Do you think that in the next, because we're getting mixed signals here of looking at election 2020, Joe Biden has said he wants to decriminalize marijuana. The campaign has said that he is evolving, even though he has had ongoing opposition to legalization. President Trump has toyed with the idea of legalization and then has also said that it should be left up to the states. So this will eventually become an issue for us all to grapple with.
I think so. But it is, you're seeing sort of baby steps. I mean, one of the biggest things to watch, again, this is very inside baseball, but I think one of the biggest things to watch is what happens with banking reform, for example. So the House passed a measure called the Safe Banking Act last year, which essentially would open up financial services to businesses that are in states where it's legal. Because as I said earlier, they're dealing in cash. This is important for a couple of reasons. Number one, from a security point of view, also from a tax point of view, because you're making sure that even if it's not a cash business then, and it's banked, it's easier for states to track what's happening with revenue. But also it would I think the hope is that it would also allow for entrepreneurs to access business loans from banks, which they can't do now. So it would hopefully open up the market to more people. So those provisions were stalled in the Senate, but then they were added into the HEROES Act, which is a stimulus package that the House passed, and this summer they were still negotiating with the Senate. It remains to be seen whether or not any of those provisions will stay in this next package whenever that comes to pass. But that's important because that would allow those businesses at the state level to, again, become much more legitimate. So I think that's important to look at. I think, you know, Kamala Harris, you know, as the choice for VP, I think a lot of the industry is watching that choice and sort of what that, you know, how that may be a harbinger for what happens next. Because although Harris, you know, was opposed, I believe in 2018 she came out as in favor of legalization and has been quite vocal about it in the last couple of years. So will that move Joe Biden? You know, we don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens. I also think this, on that point, you know, Arizona is voting, New Jersey is voting, Montana is voting. They're all voting on adult use. So I think the momentum is just going to continue, and I don't think anybody really knows, you know, when the federal government will act. I think everyone sort of feels that at some point, you know, most of the states will have their programs in place. And then at that point, you know, that may be the time that Washington will finally have to do something to deschedule it. But it's just continuing to move. I think that's so interesting. Like, the local level, the momentum is there, and these states are just continuing to grow their programs. But there are some key votes this fall on it in November. So we'll see how that shakes out. It's also very popular. So who knows? You know, maybe we'll have some kind of, you know, surprise at the last minute from the Trump administration. You know, I don't have any inside information, but who knows?
Well, as I say, he has toyed with that idea. The popularity, I mean, also gets to this. We are looking at many, many states, if not all states, who are cash strapped. And this is a way of making money.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I just did an interview earlier today with somebody on a public affairs show up in Burlington, Vermont. And that's what we were talking about. The Vermont legislature is taking it up again right now. And one of the reasons for that is, you know, the prospect of generating a lot of tax revenue. And, you know, you've seen how that's worked out in other states, and certainly in Colorado.
One of the things that I would like to point out as we end our time together here is that this is a very complex story, and your way of telling it is through introducing us to some very, very interesting people. And I am hoping that you can just share with us how you found this ragtag bunch to to tell this particular tale.
Well, first of all, I just want to say that there were hundreds of people that I could have chosen, and because there's so many fascinating people in this industry. I mean, just the risks that they have to take to go into it and the amount of money that they invest in it. And, you know, it really takes a certain type of person to want to do this, because these are not easy businesses to run. And so, just to give a quick overview, so the characters are, there's four main characters who we follow their story. So there's Beth Stavola, who is a New Jersey Shore mother of six, who was one of the only women to ever build a multi-state marijuana operation in the U.S. And she has a fascinating story of getting into the business, the medical industry in Arizona, and ends up, her story is about how she sort of, you know, has to figure out who the good guys are and who the bad guys are, and, you know, how do you take something that's been in the shadows and make it legitimate. And so she's got a really fun, wild story. There's Ted Chung, who's Snoop Dogg's business partner and the mastermind behind Snoop's investments in cannabis, and how he started his venture capital firm to invest in the space, as well as how he ended up getting Martha Stewart to go on television with him and be on this pot-themed talk show on VH1. There's Bruce Linton, who's the founder of Canopy Growth, which is one of the largest cannabis companies in the world. And, you know, his story of trying to create this cannabis beverage of the future to appeal to Chardonnay moms. And then finally, there's Chef Jeff Danzer, who is the Julia Child of weed. And we take you inside his kitchen and how he's sort of trying to create all of these amazing innovations that would appeal to the mainstream, as well as kind of promoting, you know, the therapeutic benefits as well of cannabis. So we take you inside some of the science. So how did I find them? Just working the phones and, you know, going to the convention and talking to people and, you know, just old-fashioned shoe leather reporting, frankly, over 3 years. And was just very lucky that these four allowed me to be a fly on the wall in their worlds over those years.
It's a fascinating story. Heather Cabot's new book is The New Chardonnay, The Unlikely Story of How Marijuana Went Mainstream. The book is published by Crown. Heather Cabot, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Take care.
Be well. Thank you. Again, Heather Cabot's new book is The New Chardonnay. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.